Well, Michael Gardner was the number one draft pick, came across to the Saints at the end of 2006, was a part of back-to-back grand final appearances in 09 and 10, missing the replay in 2010 with injury. Still calls Melbourne home. Ironic also, we got him on this week, his ruck partner in crime, Stephen King, coming up against the Saints for his first game as senior coach this week. Also for Michael, obviously dabbling in a bit of racehorse ownership post his football career and took out the Blue Diamond with Streisand. But Michael, thanks very much for jumping on with us.
No worries, guys. Good to be on.
How does that thrill compare? Obviously, you got very close to winning a premiership, but how do you think a premiership would have compared to watching Streisand cross the line in a Group 1?
Look, it was a great experience. Obviously, a Group 1 race. All your friends and all my friends and family were there, and a racing's been a passion and probably been in my family for many generations. Extra special to have my family colours worn by the jockey on Streisand. So it was a massive rush, and it was certainly a very good experience.
Gardy, I want to take you back, I guess. Your West Coast career is pretty well documented, but there's a bit of a sliding doors moment. Obviously, in the early 2000s, St Kilda were looking for a ruckman. Yourself at West Coast, a young understudy in Perth called Dean Cox. Obviously, out now is that Grant Thomas and the footy department at St Kilda had targeted Dean Cox as a guy that they wanted to bring over. Obviously, you did your knee. Dean Cox cements himself as the number one. And had his career and the rest is history. You ended up with us a couple of years later. When you were the senior ruck at West Coast and Dean Cox was potentially looking at moving, did you have any of those conversations with Coxie about what that might look like? You know, what should he do? Did he come to you as a bit of a mentor or anything like that at that part of your career?
Not specifically about him sort of moving over to St Kilda, but I think, you know, we had a good relationship in the early days, when he was a young fella, up and coming player at West Coast. So, we'd play on each other as you do against some of the players in the same position as you do. So we'd play all the match simulation and everything like that. I'd like to hope that it's at some stage, you know, he learned a bit about off me with running patterns and things like that. And then he, you know, took his game to another level. So as far as him sort of moving or anything, I didn't have any conversations, you know, with that. But certainly I think, I think back in the day then when we first sort of started to play the ruck and, I'd probably spend 20, 25 minutes on the ground and Cox would come on for the last sort of 5 minutes. That's the sort of way it was done back then. Now, obviously, a lot more rotations in the modern football is a lot more rotations. So, he got to probably watch when I was playing, probably my sort of maybe all Australian years and things like that. Hopefully he sort of learned a bit off me back then. And as I said, he took his game to another level.
So going back to the early days, we see these days the number one pick has always been a huge honour and that sort of thing. They've brought it to the stage now that it's a big night. One year they did a countdown to the number one position. They've done all sorts of different things for the big draft picks, I guess you'd call them. How did it compare in your day? How was the lead up to the event? How was the event actually run when you did it? And did you know beforehand that it was most likely going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose leading up to being picked, I probably thought at one stage I was going to Hawthorn, and then one stage it might have been Melbourne or North Melbourne, and I didn't really know. I came into the competition the first year that Port Adelaide was in the competition, so the lowest placed team on the ladder the previous year that lost an uncontracted player to Port Adelaide got the first pick, and that changed around a fair bit. I think at one stage Hawthorn was going to trade Nick Holland and thought he might want to go back to his old club, and then right at the end he didn't want to leave, and then Ian Downsborough ended up getting traded from West Coast. So it was only the last sort of period that I knew I was going to West Coast. West Coast is obviously a team that I followed when I was younger. I'm originally from Western Australia and country Western Australia, so I sort of knew. The draft was starting to be a bit of an event. So I did fly over and added it to one of the hotels, I think, down at Albert Park. So certainly nothing like it is now. Obviously very Americanized, like a lot of you know, sport that we do and they make a big thing of it. But yeah, it was starting to get there and it was, but I wasn't sitting there like some of the lads and didn't know the outcome. I sort of came along pretty prepared. I knew I was going to West Coast, so it was a pretty easy thing to sit through. I imagine nowadays when I think about it and I've watched a little bit of the draft and all that, like nerve-wracking times for these young kids and sitting around with their families and not knowing whether, you know, they were going to, you know, they'll play for a local team or travel across, you know, to another state. I mean, I personally I went to boarding school. So if I moved over interstate, it was probably not going to be such a big issue for me. But some of these, you know, kids they're out of home and it's a big deal.
Before we jump into the St Kilda stuff, obviously in your first year, you played the last game ever at the Witten Oval or the Western Oval as it was at the time. I've spoken to Terry Wallace about this side of the equation where they used to have the little book for the Western Bulldogs on someone they might go after that week. You were the number one draft pick. That got a lot of attention when they sort of came to you at the first bounce. So you don't strike me as the type of person that would have bothered you that much, but can you take us through that experience where you had the likes of Romero and co coming after you?
Yeah, the old mate Danny Southern from Claremont, which is the club that I played for. And I saw him in Croatia this year, actually, and pretty weird place to run into someone in Dubrovnik. But look, I mean, at the time, I'll be honest, it didn't seem like it was too big a thing, but it was a big thing made of it. Like, you know, it was actually really pretty much just a push and shove. And, you know, they were obviously, you know, had that previously. I didn't really know what was going on. It sort of was a little bit strange. I think a few of the teammates came in and flew the flag, but there's certainly something people still talk about. You know, and obviously being the last game at Witten Oval, they had a bit of a plan in place. So, it was a tough day out there that day and they got the wood over us, but certainly nothing that was too aggressive or too vicious. It was just the start of the game and it was a bit of push and shove, really.
Tell us about the trade to St Kilda. Obviously at the end of 2006, you had your issues in West Coast, has had a few players in Perth. I mean, you were a serious player, right? You were, like Aaron said, number one draft pick, all Australian. Yeah, you're a very, very good player. I mean, how did that sit with you kind of coming to the end of the contract at the end of 06 and them kind of saying, we're going to move you on, we're not going to sign you again? How did you approach that? And then I guess on the tail end of that, how did you end up at Moorabbin at St Kilda?
Yeah, I mean, interesting. I mean, I'd probably had enough of Perth and Perth had had enough of me. So it was time to move on. So I was ready for a move. And interestingly enough, I had a few contacts and one of them, who's a very good friend of mine, bloodstock agent from Hong Kong, Justin Bain, is good friends with Ross Lyon. So there was a mutual sort of a contact there sort of organised a meeting to come over before the draft. And then also I have another friend actually who lives overseas and he's good mates with Kevin Sheedy. And Sheeds was ringing up and Essendon were pretty keen. Sheeds was pretty keen to get me there. And I had two mates, which I respect both of them, Jazzy Bain and Phil Lawkins, who lives overseas as well. And they're both ringing me and saying, look, you know, you've got to go and speak to Ross. We've got to go speak to Sheeds. And you know, I suppose in the end, you know, I'd had a few conversations with Ross. I went to the footy club and met, you know, the likes of Nick Riewoldt and Lenny Hayes and Nick Del Santo, and there was a big group of the guys actually that sort of I sat down in front of and just had a bit of a chat, because I suppose, you know, back then there was a few concerns, but probably a few things that they'd heard and a few things from WA. So I sat down and had a really good conversation with them, and you know, I felt really comfortable with those guys. I felt really comfortable with Ross, and you know, I think that's proven to be the, you know, the right decision. And, you know, those guys are lifelong friends now, the players and also, you know, some of the coaches there. So I felt really comfortable. And, you know, and Sheeds is a good bloke as well. And, you know, I still always, you know, catch up when I see Sheeds. He's a good fella. And I'm sure it would have worked out all right there as well. But I felt really comfortable with that whole, the leadership group at St Kilda. And I think they had a reasonable feeling when they sort of sat down with me and we sort of talked through, you know, where I wanted to get to, and you know, a few things that we sort of had to talk through of the past and move forward. And as I said, we've all become sort of lifelong friends. So I'm absolutely rapt that I ended up at St Kilda.
Now, a lot of people remember, obviously, you'd going dual ruck with Stephen King, but before him, we actually brought in another ruck at pretty much about the same time in Matthew Clark, who very experienced ruckman and had been in the system for well over a decade. And how did you work with him at first? How was the systems that you two worked together when you first started?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting with all these guys like Clark and obviously Kingy as well. I mean, I had some, you know, pretty good battles with them in the past. So it's quite a funny scenario when you go to a new club and sort of break a bit of bread and sort of forget about some of the battles that you've had with them in the past. I mean, yeah, I think Clark is a good ruckman. He's a strong guy, and you know, he's a really good tap ruckman. So you know, it's like anything in life. You know, you take what you can out of you know, experiences with people, and you know, I thought he was a really good tap ruckman, and you know, had a good relationship with him in the early days.
Yeah, you missed all of 07 as in that recovery, 9 games in 08, and then across 9 and 10, you played 42 of a possible 47, I think, for St Kilda through that period. At what stage did you feel you had full confidence in the body to go through it again? Because obviously you climbed up to be almost all Australian in the 09 season, but was there a moment where you thought, yeah, let's go, I've got the confidence I need now?
Yeah, I mean, I had a good couple of years there, and I think a lot of credit's got to go to sort of David Misson and the physios and everyone that really designed a good program for me. I probably, someone that likes to train, I still train pretty much most days, you know, still in my life, and sometimes probably could overtrain, and I think that probably caused me some issues too, like, you know, from my younger years. And I think they just had a really good handle on my footy program, and you know, it was pretty, you know, it was really that main session, just getting myself ready for one main session for the week and obviously the game, and then the rest of the week was pretty much around recovery. So so yeah, through those years where we had a really good handle on you know, on my program, it was certainly, certainly confident. And then I think also just being able to, you know, I was surely sharing the ruck duties with Kingy as well. So I think that really helped as well. So, you know, not having too big a load during games and really just sharing that, you know, sharing that and knowing each week, you know, that we both had a role to play, myself and Kingy, and, you know, and not knowing that I was, you know, you weren't going to get to the bottom of the fuel tank, you know, at every game and then have to reload again. So I think it was a mixture of all those things that probably, you know, gave me the confidence through those years.
As Darren said, you played some bloody good footy over those couple of years. Everyone remembers that mark and goal at the end of the greatest game in home and away history at Marvel, round 14, 2009 against Geelong. Most people probably forget that you kicked 4 in that game, not just that one at the end, and walked away with 3 Brownlow votes. What are your memories of that night?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was 30 as well that day. So it was my birthday in more ways than one. But just a fantastic game to be part of. Like, I mean, both teams, you know, and obviously that game comes up a bit and, you know, comes up on Fox Footy a little bit. And you just look at the caliber of the players that are playing for both sides. Geelong had a sensational team and you know, we had a really solid team as well, and it was sort of all over the ground. You know, we're quality players. So, you know, I just remember the ball, just remember it being, obviously it was a Monday night, I just remember the ball just buzzing around, and remember the skills and the pace of the game being red hot. And then obviously, you know, I was still obviously kicking the goals and kicking that goal at the end, and I think, you know, with about a minute to go, and then I think I ended up with the ball on the wing as the siren actually went. So it was just one of those memorable nights. You know, great to be part of a great win with a great team and against a great opposition as well.
And remembering the call from Dennis Committee, appropriately, from being replayed a number of times this week. It's just one of those voices that you a highlight like that. You'd sort of go, I'm glad he called that sort of moment, I guess. And, it's certainly one that we can hear that, I guess, see that footage without any sound, and you know exactly what's happening and you know exactly what the sound is and the call. And yeah, something just, I guess it's imprinted into our minds at that game. So yeah, to go and, I guess, to have moments like that called by someone like that, it would be right up there somewhere in your career.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Dennis Committee's good West Australian like myself, and knew Dennis reasonably well, and he's a great man, and you know, great for the game of football, and we'll never forget. You know, I think you know, us footy people, like, you know, passed away last week, obviously, and I think we're all sending around some of his famous lines, just remembering him last week, and yeah, I mean, it was another sort of special moment, and another big part of the game now that Dennis passed away.
How much does it burn for you, I guess, when you look at those close grand finals across that year, given your previous history? Obviously, you played in the grand final in 05, which you lost by a kick, missed 06, which was a tight win. Sean Dempster was obviously similar. He got a premiership at Sydney, but played in a lot of those close games. And you come to the Saints, the 09 grand final, which was heartbreaking. And then the draw in 2010, I'd hazard a guess you'd almost collectively be the closest without having one. How does it sit with you and you reflect over that?
Yeah, it's really tough. And I think, you know, grand final week's always a really tough one. But look, ultimately, you know, I think you look at your life, and I was able to play, you know, with some fantastic people and have some fantastic experiences and at times play some really good football, and ultimately came up a bit short. But, you know, it's a game, and obviously that's the ultimate, to win one, and that's what we always tried to do. But don't really think, you know, really left much, you know, didn't really leave much in the tank anyway. So I suppose, you know, you do your best, you roll the dice. Yeah, pretty much two kicks separates all three of those grand finals. So it's really hard, but, you know, you move on, and that's what and after footy's finished, there's nothing you can do about it. You look forward, you move on with the next phase of your life. But certainly it burns. And, you know, I've got a good mate who's godfather, one of my kids, that won three Brownlows and three premierships. And, you know, like, but that's the way it goes. So, yeah, we move on, and there's a lot of people that, you know, deal with a lot of tougher things than losing grand finals. So I always thank myself, pretty lucky for the opportunities that I have had.
Tell us about the end of your career, end of 2011. You only played the one game that year. I mean, how did you approach that final game? Did you know that was going to be the end? How did you make that call? Like, that year as a whole for you, after the previous couple, where you played some really good footy and been a key piece in that team that made multiple grand finals. I mean, how was that final season for you?
Yeah, well, I suppose I was definitely knew I was coming to the end of it. And when you finish a game of footy and you're probably playing the next week and you're still sore from the previous week, you probably know it's nearly time. And I think I go through it. I've had about 20 operations on my body. So both feet have been done multiple times, both knees multiple times, both groins, both shoulders, elbows. Like, there's a lot of operations. So over time, that takes its toll. And as much as, you know, I would love to have, you know, I like the competitive nature of sport, and I obviously love staying fit and healthy. And then, you know, and I would love to have kept doing it, and the brain would like to keep doing it. You just know the body can't do it. So through that last year, I was probably just there as a bit of a backup. So, you know, if they needed me at any stage, I was there. I was obviously playing a bit of VFL footy, and I was just there as a backup. And look, I think what happened, lucky enough to still get that game, sort of gets me to the 200 club, which is pretty grateful for that. Ross gave me the opportunity, because there's obviously some pretty good lurks that you get with the 200 club. So I was able to play it. I think, you know, I think we played at MCG, played against Carlton. It was the last round of the year. And I think, you know, whether they were resting one of the other big guys, or just making sure that if I was needed at some stage, I'd had that game of AFL into me if they went deeper into the finals. So, look, I was grateful to get the game. I was there as a bit of a backup, and that's what sort of happens towards the latter part of your career.
So looking back, just back to the 09-10 seasons, if you were to say right here, right now, despite the fact they're almost the same, which is the team you would go, that's the team I'd be sending out tomorrow to win a match? Which is the team that was probably above the other one? Like, we know they're very similar, but which is the one you'd be wanting to be part of?
Look, I always look at 09 as the one we should have won. Personally, I think we probably, you know, there's lots of things that happen in games of footy, but I just think that just, you know, Cop, I actually did a hammy in the first quarter of the Collingwood game and sort of didn't play much, unfortunately, in 2010. But 2009, I was sort of out there, and you know, I just think we probably, you know, there's a few things that happened that, you know, hadn't sort of happened all year, and, you know, balls hit the post and little toe. But I just thought that was the game that we could have won. I thought Collingwood, I'd be lucky to get back into that game, like, is sort of what I felt. But I thought that the Geelong game, that 2009 season, was the season that we really, you know, that's the one that I feel we sort of, you know, that got away from us. But look, you know, ultimately we're playing a very, very good side that were, you know, that had a lot of stars in it as well. But yeah, when I think back at it, that's the game I think probably I think we should have won.
Last one on the footy from me, obviously that 2010 grand final, as you said, doing the hammy early and then observing Cozzy obviously go into the ruck, and you've obviously got that feeling that you can't do too much about it, but obviously the momentum is moving back the other way. After that game, I know a lot of us felt that for the replay, we could have started the same way, say Cozzy in the ruck, Gilbert forward, a few of the things that we did in that game, but obviously it reverted back to normal. It's just that McAvoy obviously came in to replace you. In retrospect, should we have started the same way in the replay, or were we just a bit too banged up overall?
Hard for me to say. I mean, like, yeah, it was an interesting one because in 2010, yeah, the one when I was injured, I mean, Cozzy was a big part of us getting back into the game. So, you know, like, it's you know, it's funny how sort of things sort of work out. Look, I specifically, I probably can't remember. You know, I can't remember the start of that game. I was, to be honest, probably pretty gutted sitting up in the stands having to watch it. And, you know, it just didn't look like it. Unfortunately, I think we were pretty banged up and we didn't look like it right from the outset for that game. So I'm not sure if any moves like that would have actually changed it, considering, you know, what actually happened in the end.
Gutty, what does life look like for Michael Gardner now? Obviously, you know, well-documented Blue Diamond winner a couple of weeks ago. What's life like for you nowadays, and what's your connection to the footy club today?
Look, I live in Melbourne, so I've been here for nearly 20 years now. Lived in Melbourne longer than I've lived anywhere. So I moved into Port Melbourne 20 years ago when I came over to play for the Saints and still live here. So I'm married with three daughters. I work at Colliers, so I'm in property. You know, I sell development sites for Colliers. So I've always been in that sort of that property sort of industry. Which I enjoy. I've got a couple of pubs with a business partner in Adelaide as well. So that sort of, you know, which is a good bit of diversity. The racing side of things, which you guys brought up, I've got, you know, my good friend and, you know, Clint McDonald, who's the trainer of, who was a trainer of Stryers that won the Blue Diamond the other day. He's a good mate of mine, and good mate of mine purchased the horse. And, good friends in the ownership gang. So that's just an interest outside of football, outside of work, sorry, and my family. And then from a football side of things, I don't have any direct involvement with the Saints. I mean, I was there on Sunday night to watch them. You know, and I think we had a bit of a past players thing. So I sat up there with Milne and Gwildy, and, you know, I was there to watch the game. I probably, my daughters follow the Saints, so, you know, they'll get to a handful of games every year. So we're lucky enough to go to a couple of crackers last year when we beat Geelong, and I was there with my daughters and my wife when we beat Melbourne, obviously came down from 8 goals last year. So my girls love going, and the Saints are really good at inviting them to different things throughout the year, and then occasionally they might get me to speak at one of the events, you know, often probably against Geelong or something. Can we roll that game out? So I'll do what I can for them, you know, but I don't have any direct involvement. But, you know, I love the opportunity that the Saints gave me, the guys that I played with and the coaches that were down there. And, Always find them very welcoming and happy to do what I can when I can for them.
Now, one bit of silverware you did get during the time with us was the NAB Grand Final. Over at Adelaide, we went over there and won the trophy. What do you think of how it works these days? Do you think we need a pre-season competition like that, something that's maybe got a little bit of meaning to it, rather than having a season that now goes well over half a year and all that? Do we need something proper that leads into a season rather than just one scratch match, then all of a sudden it's here on the first weekend of March?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm sort of the opinion that, you know, for a fair competition, you sort of should be playing every team once. Otherwise, so, like, you know, especially as there's more and more teams getting in, I know that obviously there's a revenue issue there if that happens, so you don't get enough games in the season. I think it's tough. I mean, the whole pre-season things, it's tough. I mean, you've got to get enough miles and get enough game into you to be right for the season. But I'm not sure the pre-season. It's a bit like a State of Origin. Like, I'm not sure I would have, you know, I mean, it's great in, I think we all like the romance of the State of Origin, but like, you know, there's a few injuries that sort of came out of it, and, you know, high pressure game at that time of the year with a few of the older players. I'm not sure. Does it have a place? Possibly. They toss up sort of maybe after the gather round, like when everybody's in the one spot and you could, you know, if there was a bye the week after, you know, when people are a bit match hardened and a bit match fit, you know, is that an opportunity? Maybe that could work, you know, because everyone, as I said, they do like the romance of it. But yeah, but pre-season, I suppose the AFL would do it if they got the crowds and all that sort of stuff, but it's just about getting enough into you for the main games, I reckon.
The final one, the ruck combo, obviously we've spoken a bit about that. We're doing that now, De Koning and Marshall. We had one crack at it, unfortunately. Rowan Marshall's got a concussion, so he'll miss this week. But going forward, that'll be the option. Do you see that working? Obviously, De Koning, I thought, was probably our best on Sunday in terms of how that might balance.
Yeah, I think so. And, De Koning is a star, and I've always liked the way that Marshall plays, and I think they can work it out. I think, and it was interesting walking in the other night, and we're all hyped up, see the Saints, you know, playing the first game. We got good recruits, and it was interesting just talking to some people, not that I knew them, but, you know, obviously I stand out a little bit in the crowd and always happy to talk to the punters and all that, and everyone was very pumped up. And I just think expectations, it's still going to take a while, you know, for the guys to just learn to play together. I mean, you talked about pre-season before. It's not real Mickey Mouse sort of stuff, really, in the pre-season. So it's fair dinkum now. I think it will take a little bit of time for the team to gel. And I think, you know, they can get that ruck forward combination working. There's definitely some things that, you know, that they were to learn out of the other day. I mean, Collingwood's still a good side, a lot of good players there. We're a new side, still learning to play together. I think the ruck combination is basically similar to that. So I just say to sort of everyone, you know, everyone had very high expectations, and we're all hoping for a really good result. I think there are some really good signs there, and certainly something to build on. And I know that. But Ross and the team, they're smart enough to work it out. I think you've got to expect us to be playing our best footy sort of, you know, after five or six rounds when they've played together for a while, and then obviously the back end of the year. And I think, you know, expectations should be quite strong, for next year as well.
Yeah, hopefully you can just hang in there until that happens. But, Gardy, thank you very much for jumping on and sharing the journey. You're an absolute cracker. We've had conversations about, best recruits from other clubs, and you'd certainly be, up there for the contribution during your time when we absolutely should have lifted a cup. So thanks for jumping on.
No worries, guys. Thanks for having me on. Good on you.